Hello, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators, and for the last 25 years, we've all basically worked for all the major publishers and publications in the biz. We've published over 50 books, roughly, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Yep. Each week, we tackle a different subject. It's all going to relate to illustration. Both me and Jake are going to try to prove Will wrong every time. but each time, you're going to learn something new because we have all different topics to talk about.
Yeah. So today, the thing I wanted to talk about is the creative bank account. How do you fill it? What exactly is it? It's a topic that I've realized we needed this topic because we've referred to the creative bank account in past episodes, but we've never like fully fleshed out what the creative bank account is. And I just think this is like one of those ideas that you can get better at, that you can, there's actual like tactics and strategies you can do to be more creative. So that's what I want to talk about today. So basically it's this: a creative bank account is something that each of us harbors in our own minds. And it works just like a regular bank account. The creative bank account holds creative capital, and you spend your creative capital every time you make something. So if you want to make a drawing, write a piece of music, write a poem or a short story or a novel or anything, you're going to need a steady flow of creative capital in order to do that. So the question is, how do you fill your creative bank account?
So who came up with this?
The actual term creative bank account?
Yeah.
I don't want to take credit, but I never heard anybody use it before I started using it.
I think that gives you the right to take some credit. You know, it's funny. When you first mentioned that, I was a little resistant to the idea. Mm-hmm. And as you unpack this, I think I'm hoping that people will really understand how important it is, because I've realized that a lot of what you were talking about and what I took issue with early on was just over semantics. Mm. But we do we cannot create in a vacuum, right? No. We need stimulus in order to create new things.
Well, that's one of the problems, I think, with the current university system, is that they actually sort of, it's not ever said out loud, but they actually push you to sort of create in a vacuum. They try to dissuade you from looking at other artists. They talk about, you know, just creating from yourself all the time, that your style will happen naturally and your skill will develop naturally. And we all know that that's not true, but it's funny how opposite this idea runs to, I think, current streams in education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact quote from Steve Jobs, but the way that I remember it is that ideas are just connecting dots. So the more dots you have, the more interesting your connections can become. And I actually was thinking about this yesterday. I was thinking about this episode, and I pulled out a piece of paper, and maybe you want to do this too if you're listening. Pull out a sheet of paper. You probably have one handy. If you're driving, don't pull out a piece of paper. Just keep both hands on the wheels. But pull out a piece of paper and draw two dots. Now connect a line between those two dots, okay? And look at what you have. Not very interesting. Not something, you know, that's inspiring any sort of creative thought, right? Draw a third dot and now connect the lines. And what you have is a shape. You should have a triangle of some kind, okay? Now what I want you to do is draw 10 more dots around it, and then just start however you want, just start drawing lines between those dots. You can make shapes, you can make you know, crisscross patterns, you can make polygons, whatever it is. And what you have with the 10 dots or the 13 dots is actually the beginning of some sort of geometric drawing. And that's just a visual representation of what's happening in your brain when you have a ton of dots to work with. Okay, so another example to take this even further is the example of a city. And I was reading There's a book called Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation. Have you noticed every book has a subtitle? No book just has a title anymore. So this one's called Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation. I don't know why it couldn't just be one or the other of those, but...
What would the subtitle of this podcast be?
This podcast has a subtitle. It's Does called it? 3-Point Perspective, The Illustration Podcast.
See?
So that, you know, I should take my own medicine. Why don't we just call it the Illustration Podcast? I don't know. 3-Point Perspective is way more clever than the Illustration Podcast.
Who came up with that, by the way?
Well, I don't want to take credit, but
I came up with that one. I'm taking credit for that one. Jake has a creative bank account.
It was all Lee White.
We all had really good ideas until Lee came along with that one.
No, we had horrible ideas.
And then I crushed. No, it was actually an evolution because we kind of worked our way to that point. But I made the last little dot and line as Jake's analogy to the 3-point connection. That's 3-point perspective.
And I was like, there's got to be a better name. And there wasn't. That was it. So we did it. Anyways. The city example is what it's going to talk about. And this is from Where Good Ideas Come From, the Natural History of Innovation book. And he says in it, a city that was 10 times larger than its neighbor wasn't 10 times more innovative. It was 17 times more innovative. A metropolis 50 times bigger than a town has 130 times more innovation. And he calls it Kleber's Law. Kleber's Law... Actually, he doesn't call it this. This is a separate law. Kleber's Law, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but whatever. Who cares? Kleber's Law proved that as life gets bigger, it slows down. But West's model demonstrated one crucial way in which human-built cities broke from the patterns of biological life. As cities get bigger, they generate ideas at a faster clip. And that's what we call superlinear scaling. So what happens is because you're in a city, you not only get you're every day you're bumping into different people, different ideas, different cultures, because many different cultures are all converging on the cities. And what's happening is you're connecting dots that nobody would have thought to connect before just because you're having access to that. So the city example, the dot example is all to state that maybe the question we shouldn't be answering today is how do you fill a creative bank account? It's what's the best way to fill a creative bank account, or what should that creative bank account like consist of? What should be in it? You know, I want to give one more example too of one of my favorite artists. I've been lukewarm on him over the years, but lately I've been looking at a lot of his stuff and really coming to appreciate it even more. It's Picasso. You may have heard of him. That's some Spanish guy. But what was really cool is this month's National Geographic has a piece on it. They're doing a whole series on creativity, and they have a piece on Picasso, and I was reading it, and there's a section here about the creative bank account. And the quote goes, "He was a sponge," says Emily Bouvard, the curator of the Musée Picasso Paris. The writer asked Bouvard to pick the quality that best exemplifies Picasso's prowess. In my opinion, it's assemblage, she says, the artist's ability to sift through layered memories, a conversation with the poet, the haunting expressions of an El Greco painting, the medley of sensations from Malaga, a pot of paint in his studio. And what Picasso was doing was he was looking at his surroundings. He was looking at his environment. He was talking to people. He was experiencing life. And all of that was going into his work. And he was creating artwork that nobody had ever seen before. And he was using shapes and compositions and colors and just doing things that the art world hadn't quite seen before. And it was because he was taking full advantage of his creative bank account and putting just as many different kind of dots into it as possible and applying it. So how do you fill your creative bank account? I've got some ideas here, but I want to hear what you guys think. How do you, Lee White, fill your creative bank account?
Well, let me go back 1 second because I wanted to talk to the point you're making about the cities, which is actually really cool. I wanted to ask you guys, would that be just by itself enough of a reason to move to the city? If you're in Iowa somewhere out in the fields trying to do this and you're soaking up all this online stuff, is that enough or do you need to move to the city? That's my first question. And the second thing, I just wanted to add a little anecdote that I've always hated. I mean, one of the reasons I'm with SVS and you guys, and one reason this podcast is happening is because I hated being by myself all day in a studio. I don't know if anybody else feels this way as an illustrator, but I'm getting ready to move to Nashville, Tennessee. And the first thing I did before even looking for a house or apartments or whatever is I found a group studio and I'm already accepted into that little beehive. And it's pretty cool because there's architects there and there's graphic designers, interior designers. There's sculptors. I mean, there's a cake maker. I mean, there's all kinds of different businesses that are happening under the same roof. And what you're talking about is exactly what I wanted. I didn't want to even be there with all illustrators. I wanted to be there with other people to see how they solve problems. And so it's just an interesting thing. And I think now is a greater time than ever to be able to do these, you know, just because we work solo as a freelance artist doesn't mean you have to work solo as a freelance artist. Jake and Will are together in a studio and there's other people coming and going and I want that too. And so what do you guys think about that?
I don't think you have to necessarily move to a big city, but I think it's more of a mindset of making sure that you're exposing yourself to a lot of different experiences. And I think, you know, if you're living in a town with only 100 people in it, that's going to be pretty hard. I think that you're onto something when you say, you know, it'd be easier to move to a big city and get those varied experiences, right? But, you know, living out here in Utah, I've noticed that a lot of the experiences that I've had have crept their way into my books. Like I remember working on Senorita Gordita, the book that Helen Kinneman wrote, and the images for that were burned into my brain from our many trips down to Southern Utah and traveling and hiking in the Red Rock. And, man, I remember the epiphany I had when I started to work on that and I started going through our photos and I started looking at Google images and I remember thinking the rocks that I'm drawing, these big, huge monolithic red rock with the stained striations, if you've been to Zion, if you've been out here, you know what I'm talking about. They can be any shape. They could take any form. They do have some uniform irregularities, but I remember that a lot of that came from my mind of just the things that I had seen and looked at. The other part of that is challenging yourself to be the type of person who's open to new experiences. So like doing things that you might not necessarily want to do when you're invited, because it's not like the thing that you do, but if a group of friends are going to do something new, like play frisbee golf or something, you know, if you've never done it and you know, you're a little unsure, you're a little apprehensive. I think being the type of person to just say yes, you know, like the movie that Jim Carrey was in, the Yes Man, that person is going to have a lot more creative bank account than the person who's like, this is what I do every day is basically the same. I sit in my studio and I draw and I hang out with the same friends and I go to the same coffee shop and I do all the same things. My grandmother was a great example of that. She was game for anything. If we wanted her to do something, she would do it with us. And she lived really long. And they actually have linked that to, I know this is a little off topic, but there's speculation that Alzheimer's patients, a lot of people that get Alzheimer's are people that don't do the mental gymnastics of stretching their brain and challenging themselves in different ways. Their days are basically the same. I don't know if that's, my mom died of Alzheimer's, so that's why I'm saying that.
I've heard that too, that, you know, a lot of people do crossword puzzles or play chess or things just to keep the mind sharp. But who knows? I was also listening to a thing this week that they think Alzheimer's is a bacteria.
It's just genetic, you know? Or bacteria. Yeah. So It sounds good for this podcast. Let's just pretend that works.
It can't hurt, right? I mean, to have mental gymnastics, it can't hurt.
Right.
I also want to say that if you're getting your medical advice from an illustration podcast, you're doing it wrong. I want to speak too to, do you need to live in this city? I know people who live in cities who are lonely, you know, who surrounded by people still keep to themselves, you know, they don't go out, they don't interact. And so I think you could be just as, you could probably, if you're striving for this and working toward it, you could be really creative and looking for paths to creativity, and collecting your dots and filling your creative bank account, you know, in a small town in middle America, or some backcountry, you know, place in Australia, who knows, as long as you're taking advantage. And also I think with the internet, you have access to every idea in the world. It's all there. And that's what I wanted to kind of, as I was studying this out, and I've been thinking about this for the last several years, I've realized that there's indirect experiences and there's direct experiences. And you need, I think, a steady diet of both. Okay. So an indirect experience is where you experience through something through the filter of someone else. So when you read a book or you go see a film or you listen to an album, you're experiencing that person's something that someone created. And it usually is based on their experiences and their connecting of dots, right? But that's how you stay, I think, culturally aware of what's happening in the world. And that's a completely valid way to fill your creative bank account. On the other side, the direct experiences, these are experiences that you're having yourself that isn't filtered through anyone else. So this is when you travel, when you go to a different country or you go to a different part of your state, or even when you go to the other side of the town you live in, you don't frequent that side. You're automatically exposed to new things, to new people, to, you know, you might see a restaurant you never noticed there before or something. Another example of indirect experiences is I use Pinterest a lot, and that's my, not just Pinterest, but I have a hard drive where I keep reference imagery. So if I find something, I can just throw it in the hard drive or I can pin it on Pinterest. But I like to keep art boards and keep them organized by subject matter so that when I need an idea for a robot or for a car or for a character, I can go through and look and see what other people have created and see how I can apply that to the thing that I'm doing. Those are indirect experiences. I think another example of an indirect experience is going to a library. And this is, I mean, we have Google, we have Wikipedia at our fingertips, but you want to visit an actual library. Keep it in your rotation at some point, because when you go to a library, you have to pass through several different departments to get to the section that might interest you. And along the way, and I used to go to a library a lot more often than I do now. I need to get back into this. But I remember I had a habit of weekly going to the library, and I would go straight to the new books section just to see what was new. And then I would go back to the art books section. But along the way, I'd always pass through like the gardening section or the vehicle section or the fiction section or whatever it is. And every time there'd be a book that I would see that I would have never have thought to look up. And I'd end up checking that out. And it was just a way to expose myself to something that I never would have thought to expose myself to.
That's awesome. I'll add to that one. This past weekend, so I'm going through the final stages of selling my home, which Jake and Will are probably totally sick of hearing about. Again. But it's a long, long slog. And this past like 3 weeks or a month, actually, I've taken off from illustration just to work on this house and try to get it ready to sell. And so I'm really burned out of both, of doing house stuff. But then I noticed over the 4 weeks, I started to find myself slipping a little bit away from illustration too, just because I was so mentally fatigued about doing this project that was just so physically demanding. And so this past week we're done and we're staying at a hotel because we're having the open house. And it's like first chance I had to like, you know, kind of sit up and look around and take a breath. And I found myself like not necessarily motivated in the same normal way I was for illustration. So anyway, fast forward, we're going to dinner because we're at a hotel and can't cook there. So we're going to dinner and we stop just randomly. We park next to a comic shop that I've never been in. And I got to be honest, this is going to be blasphemy, but I don't like comics for the most part. Now, when I say comics, I am talking about like superheroes and all that stuff. I know like 90% of you guys are from that world. I get it. I never did that as a kid. I never looked at comics as a kid. So it just wasn't part of my upbringing.
I have to confess that I didn't either.
I like the covers. And then a lot of times I'll look inside and I'm like, ah, it's too busy. Like it's just too much stuff in there. Mm-hmm. but the covers are pretty nice. Anyway, so we park the car, we go to dinner and we're coming back and I noticed the comic shop still open. I was like, you know, my son and my wife were with me. I was like, let's go in here and check this out. And so we walk in. Oh my gosh. It was one of the best comic shops. It was all graphic novels. It wasn't like Superman or Batman or stuff like that, that I don't really generally.
Well, you're in Portland, which is like a comic book capital of the world.
God. Yeah. So. I'm totally wasting it too. I don't even go or do anything. Like,
it'd be like living in Rome and being like, so I went into this Catholic church.
Yeah. Have you guys seen there's a Colosseum? And, yeah. Anyway, I want to give a shout out to this shop because it was so good. It's called Cosmic Monkey. I'd never seen it before. Anyway, we went in and it's all graphic novels, many from Europe. And I kind of leaned towards that way for my illustration influence anyway. And I found this book. I mean, it was one of the first ones I just walked by and the cover just grabbed me. And then I opened it up and I got more into it. And by the time we left, I bought it for my son, but I was super excited. I didn't even want to let him look at it because I wanted it for me. Don't touch it with your grubby little fingers. And we went back to the hotel room and we read half of it because it's pretty long. And we read it and that was right back in, you know, my mind all of a sudden is spinning images and I'm thinking about stories. And it took was that one moment and it was just so serendipitous, but then it was so just cool. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about, getting out into the world versus saying, oh, I can just Google something or I got my Pinterest page. I mean, it's too easy to do that. And I think a lot of people are kind of holing up in a weird way. So you got to get out and see it. Cause I would have never picked that book. I would have never found that book if I had to work my way through Pinterest or something like that. It was just something that somebody else curated, put it in their shop. And then I walk right by it and it had me.
What was the name of that book?
I will go get it. Something like The Path, something with path in it. Does that help?
Okay. No, we'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, that's a good idea. It's really good. It's really good.
Cool. So one thing I think we ought to mention or at least kind of gloss over is the idea that, you know, not everyone's bank account is going to be the same. Like, I mean, a regular bank account, everybody has money, which is all the same. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think you need to live in a big city is, you know, people that are living in a more rural setting, or even a suburban setting, they're filling with different things that are just as valid as people that are living in a city. But I do understand the connection thing. I guess I'm getting a little defensive because I live the suburban life.
I grew up in Mesa, Arizona, which at one point Forbes had it on its list of top 10 boring places to live in the United States. Nice. And in the 80s and 90s, yeah, I could back that up. They've gone a long way since then. And now the Phoenix, Mesa, Gilbert, that whole area has really come a long way. But what was interesting is me and my friends had to make a lot of our own fun. Yeah. And we didn't spend a lot of time playing video games. And we went around getting into trouble and making things and doing stuff. And it was just, you know, it was a way to fill that. I look back and it was a way to fill my creative bank account, even though I lived in one of the quote unquote most boring cities in the world. So what I was saying was there's the indirect experiences, there's the direct experiences. And I want to just list a couple more ideas for people in both of these categories so that they can just to maximize people's time with this podcast here. So consume culture is indirect experience is consume culture because you're consuming, you're experiencing something through someone else's filter, right? So that's books, that's music, that's theater, that's film, it's comics, it's video games, it's art museum, it's dance, those types of things. I want to say with books too, and I learned this from a friend of mine. His name's Jake Wyatt. He's another artist you should familiarize yourself with. And what he said, I have it written down here. He says, always be reading three books at the same time. That's what he does. And one book, he says, is culturally required. So that's like your To Kill a Mockingbird or your Watership Down or your...
Grapes of Wrath
or something like that, right? Always be reading a book that the culture that you live in necessitates that you understand that book so that you can know about your culture, right? So that's one. Always be reading a book that's culturally relevant. So that's something that's more, he calls it your NPR books. So it's a book that an author is like, you know, making the rounds and it's sort of in the zeitgeist right now. So always be reading a culturally relevant book. I would say like we read Shoe Dog recently, which came out a few years ago, but it was sort of a big deal book, making the rounds. And then also read one book that's personally relevant to you. So, you know, if you're big into fantasy, be reading a fantasy book. If you're big into, you know, sci-fi or romance or whatever it is, or comics or graphic novels, be reading a book that's relevant to you. And the reason you want to do it this way, and maybe you don't want to do a culturally relevant book, and maybe you don't want to do, maybe it's three books that are all personally relevant to you, whatever it is. The reason you want to read multiple books at the same time is it allows these dots to connect easier. So oftentimes what happens is if you read books linearly, so you read through one book, finish it, start the next book, finish it, start the next book, finish it. A lot of times you'll forget something that happened early on in one book that might go really well with something that's going on at the end of another book. And by reading the books together, it allows, I don't know, like this cross-pollination to happen that might not otherwise happen. Do you guys have any comment on that? Or
no, it's perfect.
You look okay. Okay, good.
Except for I never have a chance to read any books, but I got another recommendation for that though. A tip or a technique. You guys remember that famous book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain?
Yeah.
I think this is from that. I haven't read that in probably 15 years, but for some reason, I think it's part of that. But one of the things that in that book was set up a weekly artist date. And that is just a date where you are going to guarantee that you get out of the studio. This is not a Pinterest date. It is a leaving your house date. And you go to some gallery or some comic book shop or some figure drawing session or some kind of thing where you're getting out of your own, you know, normal habit. And what I love about that idea is that it's that there's a schedule. You can actually check it. I like checklists. I mean, I think all three of us are a little bit OCD in that way. And I like being able to say, did I go on my artist date this week? You know, did something happen? Because otherwise it's just kind of random. You look out in the world like a kind of, what should I do? But with a deadline and a criteria to fill, it becomes a lot easier because then you can start planning for it.
I love that. Set your artist date. That's great.
And one of the rules that I remember reading with that was go by yourself. Don't go with a group of people. Don't go on a sketch date with 10 people or with your wife or husband or boyfriend, girlfriend, whoever in tow. Mm-hmm. Like this needs to be yours. And that was really important.
I love that. I actually really, really love being by myself in one of those situations where, because you don't have to, I think when you're with someone, you really have to like filter your experience through that person a little bit too. Like, and that's important too, right? But I think it's necessary, definitely necessary to have those alone moments to just process. So that goes with having direct experiences. So we went through the indirect experiences. Direct experiences, I just mentioned travel or explore, like you were saying with the comic shop that you went to. Other things to do are go to museums. Another thing is to do something like community service or something in your community, because usually when you do something like community service, you are put into an area of your community that you might not normally go to. You're come into contact with people in your community you might not normally come in contact with. And what that does is it changes your complete outlook and your perspective, and it might give you ideas that you never thought of before. And it's sort of like a win-win, where not only do you get to help out your community, but your community gives back to you creatively as well.
Yeah.
And then lastly, in these direct experiences too, I would say visit family.
Oh my gosh. Maybe.
No. Definitely. Well, here's the thing. We all have that brother-in-law or that sister-in-law or uncle, somebody in the family that you don't quite get along with, and they have the different political views or the different religious views or whatever it is. And they might be the biggest jerk, or they might just be someone you disagree with, but you need to be put into contact with other people outside of the bubble that you're in. And oftentimes those people are in our own families, and you never know. You might say you're writing a story. You might get an idea for a character from Crazy Uncle Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to William Joyce. He created the A Day with Wilbur Robinson, and that's was then turned into a book called Meet the Robinsons. Not turned into a book, turned into a film called Meet the Robinsons that Disney put out. And he was telling me that all of these characters in this story were based off of people that he knew in real life. And in fact, Wilbur Robinson was based off of this kid, this rich kid in his neighborhood that they would go to his house that was basically a mansion, and they'd go hang out, and he had like a replica of the Apollo moon module, you know, in his house. And they had, you know, like a train that went around the grounds and stuff like that. And he said, just go into his house on a Saturday. It was like going to Disneyland. And that was the basis for this Meet the Robinsons book, which went on to be one of the greatest, I think one of the greatest children's books, and eventually a Disney movie, film. Yeah.
You know, one of the hard things, and if I was listening to you giving this advice, Jake, of you know, filling my creative bank account, going out there and doing these different things, is you're moving without the ball, as Charles Barkley would have said. You know, mm-hmm. there's no direct payoff. Mm-hmm. So you're forcing yourself, you're having to force yourself to change your lifestyle to try to get these experiences. And yet for a lot of people, I think the thing that's going to stop them from doing that, or maybe they'll do it for a while and then find that they've stopped, is just basically they're not seeing that direct payoff. And for me, I think the thing that has kind of helped me the most is understanding that it has to be incorporated into my lifestyle. So mm-hmm. I try to take a different way home. Mm-hmm. Whenever I go different places, I'll force myself to drive a different way and see different houses and see different people. I've tried to force myself when visiting family to not, my typical desire is to rent a car when I go back east. And the last few times I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to surrender to the process of the family and mm-hmm. be out of control to some extent, to where I am going to experience things that I wouldn't experience if I had total control, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. And it actually goes to, if you didn't have another comment with that, Lee, it actually goes to this next part that I want to talk about.
I have one comment, it's a small story, but it just kind of highlights what Will's saying there, that you just don't know what you're going to experience. And that's kind of the beauty of this. And you can't look for the direct payoff, because sometimes there's not one, but sometimes there is, and sometimes it's subtle and you don't notice it for maybe a long time. But I'll tell you this one little story about going to a museum. I was at the Louvre in Paris, and I was waiting on my wife, and I'm sitting in front of this giant, giant landscape painting. And I wasn't even really into the painting. It was just this huge, I mean, you know, if you guys have been to the Louvre, the scale you're talking about here, they used to paint 50 feet wide.
Yeah.
Where are they painting these paintings?
I don't know.
That are so huge. But anyway, I'm sitting on this bench in front of it, and I'm just kind of, you know, killing time. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, nothing to do at the Louvre.
Well, I'm waiting, and there's nowhere to go. So I'm waiting for my wife. I can't leave because it's so big that you will lose somebody. And our phones didn't work, by the way. So that stopped me from my normal thing, which is looking down at my stupid phone, which I hate.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I'm just kind of, I'm going from looking at this landscape, which I didn't think that was that interesting. This big Western scene, kind of prairie shot, to looking at the people who were looking at the painting. And what I noticed was really, really interesting. So this painting is, like I said, the scale is, I can't state how big this thing is. And maybe like the size of, I don't know, your finger, I guess. There is a little bitty covered wagon with a horse pulling this wagon in the scene. I mean, the scale of it is ridiculously small. But it's funny because as people would scan their eyes across this painting, they'd kind of generally look at the whole thing. And then all of a sudden, always, like after 30 seconds, they would zoom in to that tiny little detail. And what it told me is how important the human experience is to an illustration. Yeah. Because without that little covered wagon there, it didn't mean anything, but it changed the entire meaning of the painting. And I went away from that just processing, like, why were people, they were so interested in the painting. And I'd say 100% of the people did that exact motion. Look at the whole thing, then zoom up to the little thing and look at it with their face like right next to it.
And that wagon was the only human thing in the painting.
The only human thing, yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome, honestly.
Right. And you know the artist, we got to figure out what painting that is because I want to see it. I've never been to the Louvre actually, so it's still on my bucket list. But that artist probably was out hiking, doing whatever he was doing, filling his creative bank account. And I'm assuming it's a he. I don't know. Did women paint back in the olden days?
They didn't get credit for it if they did.
Exactly. And he probably was like, look at this landscape. What's the point? And then he sees the wagon. He's like, I gotta paint this. I gotta spend the next, those things probably took a couple years to do, right?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think they were painted by aliens. I mean, I don't get it.
Right. So filling your creative bank account is the one side of the coin. Okay. The other side of the coin is three steps. Okay. This is after you've had these experiences, whether they're indirect or direct. Number one, share what you experienced. Okay. So I want you to do three things to share it. Talk to somebody about it. Write a blog post or write a journal entry or write about what you experienced. And then if you're on Twitter, you can do this. If not, you can do it off of Twitter. But condense the essence of what you experienced into a tweet, basically. Just a little blurb. And what that does is it helps you process the information that you just experienced. And I think solidifies it a little bit better. Speaking, writing, and condensing it, I think helps you absorb the experience than had you just passively like gone through it, right? And that's just another way to like really imprint those dots into your brain. I don't do this all the time, but it's something I'm going to, you know, in preparation for this podcast, I came across this idea and I was like, this is something I need to probably do a little more consistently if I want these experiences to stick a little bit better. Okay, number two. So that's number one, share what you experienced. Number two, take time to just think. And Will and I were talking about this earlier and I told him, oh, this has to do with the podcast, with one of the things I want to talk about. But every day, not every day, but every other day, I think Will goes on a bike ride or a hike or something like that. I don't know what Lee does. I think Lee, you said you run every day or a lot of days.
Yeah, almost every day. Yeah.
Sweet. And I do runs as well. But you can walk, you can swim. Do something where you aren't in front of a screen and you aren't in front of a person and you're not in front of any sort of material that can be absorbed and that allows you to be moving your body and just letting your brain wander. Okay. So it could be that. It could be maybe maybe you're not as active or you don't have time to do active. It could be that do your chores, house chores.
Yoga.
Okay, yoga could be in there. But do your chores, do your house chores. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten ideas come to me while I was washing dishes, you know, or vacuuming. Maybe it's just your commute. You have, you know, sometimes when I'm driving, turn off the radio, just let your brain think. And with all of these exercises or all these things that you're doing, these activities, is you're allowing your brain to let these things rattle around and crash into each other and helping you to create new ideas or new connections that you didn't think to do before. And I think the problem that I have and a lot of us have is we're always consuming and we're not just sitting and resting and thinking. You know, it's like the inhale, exhale, right? There's a lot of inhale, a lot of inhale, and you need to take that time to exhale as well. So that's number two. So number one, share what you experience. Number two, take time to just think. And then number three, I would say keep a sketchbook or an idea book, some sort of book that you can record all of this in. And there's a book that I listened to called Choose Yourself. It's by James Altucher. And one of the ideas in there that I tried, it's really hard, but I already saw like the benefits from it. He says to write down 10 ideas every day. And he says they could be the dumbest ideas. It could be, you know, date ideas for with you and your spouse, or it could be, you know, you see a dog and like an idea that you could do, you know, with a dog, right? Like places you could take the dog for a walk. It could be as simple as that. Or it could be something like, here's my idea for a company. Like, I always have this problem. What if there's a company that solved this? But regardless of what it is, write down 10 ideas every day. I did it for a couple of days. It was exhausting, but I try to do one or two a day or something to that effect. But what that does is it forces your brain to do the thinking, to want to absorb more of its surroundings because it's needing to come up with ideas. And it forces you to want to do more things to fill your creative bank account because you're requiring it to actually come up with ideas. So that's just one thing you can use your idea book or your sketchbook for. But the main thing is when an idea pops into your head, you've taken this time to think, you've taken this time to share what you've experienced, write down what you've come up with. And the reason for that is then you're able to not hang on to it and let your brain have room in there to absorb and collect other ideas. And I remember for a while there, I was like really coming up with, this was early on in my career, and I was coming up with like these cool story ideas. And I thought, oh yeah, that's really awesome. A week later, all I remembered was that I had a cool idea. I couldn't remember the cool idea. And so I was like, dadnabbit. I ended up going to Borders or Barnes & Noble or some bookstore and buying just a regular notebook. And I started writing down my ideas and that changed everything. And I even go back to it. It's now, I have two of these books that are just full of ideas from like my early career. I go back to them like, well, that was a dumb idea, but there's this nugget in here that's actually pretty good and I can apply it to this thing I'm working on now. So write the things down. Keep these books handy so that you can have access to them. They're not precious. The book shouldn't be precious. What's precious about them are the ideas in them. So don't feel like, you know, you've got to be like J.R.R. Tolkien and you're writing down ideas for Lord of the Rings and it's got to be like this perfect thing. Like just, you know, or what was it in The Hobbit, how they've got that leather bound like book where he's writing down his story. Don't think of it like that. Just something that, doesn't call too much attention to itself, but that you can return to and fill with your ideas.
Tim Robbins in The Hudsucker Proxy. You remember that movie?
Yeah.
So he kept saying, this is my idea, right? And he would unfold a piece of paper and it was just a circle on it. And he would tell everybody, this is my idea. This is my idea.
You know, for kids.
For kids, right. And it ended up being the hula hoop. But Hollywood.
Spoiler. Sorry. Gosh dang it, I'm Will sorry. Terry.
Spoilers. The movie's like 50 years old, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. You're fine.
if you haven't seen that now, you probably can't even find it anywhere. But no, Hollywood, sometimes they get things totally wrong. And for that movie, they did it on purpose. But that's not how we come up with great ideas. We don't just have one idea. And one thing that I found in common is when I go to conferences, children's book conferences, and you know, I'm helping students there and or helping people with their manuscripts, the people that have one manuscript that they've been working on for the past 2 or 3 years and they're just trying to polish it and get it ready, that's the only thing they have, those people tend to not get published. The people that have, I've got 100 ideas for children's books, which one do you want to hear? Those are the people that tend to get books published. And that was to go along with your idea of like keeping and filling a book with ideas. The late Rick Walton, I've referenced him before. He's a children's book author. He used to teach a class out here on how to write a children's book at BYU. And one of the exercises he would have his students do would be to come up with 100 ideas in the semester for books. And then they'd have to come up with, they'd have to flesh out 10 in a real detailed synopsis, and then they'd have to write one of them and polish one of them. And then really that's how good ideas come to the forefront, is you have to generate a lot of material, a lot of ideas first, and then you sift, and then you weed out and you polish and you refine, and you get to your really great story idea. So for you, Jake, how many stories have you written, would you say?
Like published ballpark. Or
no, just
or
that you've just written, worked come up on with? Story oh, ideas.
Huh? Yeah, 50 probably. You know, something okay. like that.
And that's not your primary job.
Mm-mm.
That's like your ancillary job. That's,
I mean, a good way to even just speak to this in another example, a little analogy, is you guys listening to this right now may think this is the perfect podcast, and it is, but it's the third version of this. This some form of us three talking and critiquing that we've done, right? I mean, we didn't just start out here at the podcast. We've already done this, and we were talking about it earlier about why we're having so much fun making these podcasts. And it's because we've spent the last 3 years trying other stuff, and we did it a little bit one way and it didn't work. And we said, oh, let's shift it this way. And then we got a little closer, and then we get closer still. And so, and that's the process of writing. And that's the process of being creative, right? Is you just kind of, you have to switch, you know, change courses a lot, and then be comfortable changing courses a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think this is about all I have as far as creative bank account is concerned. I just wanted to, wrap up and sort of just quickly overview these last three things. But one thing to your point with writing stuff down in a book and keeping these ideas, I think it's important to also just date them. And because actually I don't have anything to back that up with other than it's nice to know when you thought of the idea. Because there's been times where I'll have a sketch or I'll have something down on a piece of paper and I won't know if it was influenced by something or if it came up with just me like coming up with it from other random things. So in order to date it, you kind of know, you could kind of place it to where you were at that time in your life, you know, 10 years later or 5 years later, and you can know, oh, okay, during that time, we had just had a new baby, and so babies were on my mind, and I probably, this idea is probably based on this, you know, this experience I had at Babies R Us or something like that. Who knows, you know? But that might feed other creative ideas just because you know when and where that idea happened. So
there are also the legal ramifications that could help you with.
That's true.
Yeah. So this is a funny story. This story cracks me up every time. My friend, I have this friend and he's pretty creative. He's really one of the most unique people I know. But he told me one night as he was drifting off to sleep, and this is probably a good time to have your idea book on hand, because this is when your brain really does free association and comes up with weird stuff. you know, if you have a dream, write it down. If you have, you know, if you have an idea as you're drifting off, you can write it down really quick. But he's drifting off to sleep. And he said, as I was drifting off to sleep, all of a sudden, I had the idea for the most brilliant, like, story, children's story. And he's like, I got up, I wrote it down. I was so tired. I could barely keep my eyes open, but I just knew if I didn't write this down, I would forget it. So he writes it down and crashes, just falls asleep. Morning time, wakes up, you know, 8 or 9 hours later, however long he slept. And he kind of is shaking himself out of sleep and he remembers, oh, that idea, what was it? He couldn't remember it. And he's like, oh, I wrote it down. So he unfolds the piece of paper and reads it. And it says, I take a train to a land of magic. It was like the dumbest thing ever. And I always give him a hard time about that because he's like, it was brilliant. It was so brilliant. And it's just this train to a land of magic.
Sure. You know,
I thought his wife threw it away.
No. Anyways, I don't know. That just cracks me up every time.
That's awesome.
All right.
I have one thing to add about the sketchbook.
Yeah.
One of the things that I talk to my students about a lot is I think one of the things that gets in the way of being truly creative is the sketchbook. And then I always get these looks of, what? What are you talking about? As a student, a lot of times when you have a sketchbook, the goal as a student is to make a beautiful sketchbook. That's almost the end goal, is making nice drawings in the sketchbook. I remember having a sketchbook in college and I'd be going pretty good. I'd have, you know, 5-10 pages of pretty nice pages. And then I would mess up and I kind of would hate the sketchbook. After that, I would put it away. I didn't want to sketch in it. And so I started telling my students, especially in my sophomore junior classes, to not refer to it as a sketchbook, literally refer to it as an idea book. And that takes the pressure off of it. If somebody says, oh, let me see your sketchbook, just be like, oh, it's not a sketchbook. It's just a book of ideas. And then all of a sudden there's not this holy grail of, like, you know, the Leonardo sketchbooks. Like, that's what we kind of picture a sketchbook looking like.
Yeah.
And once I got rid of the idea of it being a sketchbook, and it just literally, it's just almost like a spider web that just catches stuff that comes off the top of my head. It became stick figures and lists. And it's the ugliest sketchbook of all time. If you found it, you would definitely not think an artist owns that sketchbook. But it really is an idea book. It just contains all this stuff, like just raw data for then making other things. And so a lot of times I would have two sketchbooks going. One of them would be drawings and observational sketching, and that would be a nicer one. Or, you know, I'd take an idea from the idea book, and then I'd start to flesh it out in nicer drawings in the sketchbook. So just a little side note, because some people get really tripped up over making a nice drawing in a sketchbook.
No, I love that idea, because there was times where I'd had a sketchbook with 10 pages and then it was done. And I was like, I don't want to ruin the sketchbook with a bad drawing, right? Now I'm more along that, like, you could open up a sketchbook and it'll have a really nice drawing next to just garbage. Like, you won't understand what it is. And I think that's a much more healthy approach. I like the idea of calling it an idea book. I think that's really good. All right. So just to wrap up here, fill your head with all kinds of different things. The more dots you have, the more varied and different the dots you have, the more interesting the connections you're going to be able to make. And the way that you make those connections is you share what you experience, you take time to just think, and you write them all down in your idea books. And that right there, guys, is how you do the creative bank account. Anything else we want to cover today, or should we wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up.
I did have one quick question.
Okay.
For people that say, you know, there's a lot of people that I'm assuming listening are, you know, get a lot of really good experiences and are really active in doing a lot of things that would fill their creative bank account, but they might say, I just don't feel creative. Are there ways that they can force those connections?
I think going back to that, writing down 10 ideas a day or 5 ideas or whatever you can muster in a day, you might go a week and just have horrible ideas, you know, or the first 100 ideas are just dumb. But what that is your brain is a muscle. It works the same way. It can atrophy, you can tire it out, but you can strengthen it through exercise. And I think that's what you would do. I think try to go for, I'm going to come up with 100 ideas, anything from, you know, what if there was beards for cats and you could, you know, you could like market to people who like beards and like cats, right? As dumb as that, to what about a really cool idea of how to, you know, like, what if Amazon did this? You know, they could make an extra $1 billion or something like that, whatever. I think doing that exercise is going to strengthen a person, just by the act of doing it. Like, if you know, if you're not thinking of anything, then how are you going to think of anything?
Right.
There's two books that I'd like to recommend to help people out with that, by the way. One of them is called Rapid Viz, and it's in its third edition now, and it's fantastic. If you're going into concept design, it's kind of a 101 type book. That's just amazing. I used to use it in my quick sketch classes as just a textbook. And I'm kind of freaking out. If you guys see me looking around, you at home can't see me looking around, but Jake and Will, there's this huge, huge bee just flew in my studio. And so I'm kind of watching out for it.
that's part of your creative bank account.
See,
there you go.
The other
write
book,
it down.
The other book is Illustration with an emphasis on list in the middle of there by Jamie Zollers, one of our teachers actually at SVS, that is just made for coming up with ideas in illustration.
Great.
That's great.
Yeah. That's really cool. Okay, we'll put those in the show notes as well. All right, guys, this has been good, but we have to get back to work.
I got to get out of my studio before I get stung by this bee.
That's right. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find him at willterry.com. On Instagram, it's at willterryart, and he has videos on YouTube. Just do a search for Will Terry on YouTube. Lee White, you can find his work at leewhiteillustration.com. On Instagram, he is at leewhiteillo. And lastly, I'm Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com. On Instagram, I am at Jake Parker, and I am also on YouTube. If you want, you can find my videos there as well. If you like this episode, please share it around. You can subscribe to it on iTunes if you haven't already. And if you're, while you're on there, please leave a review. We've been loving the reviews we've been getting so far. We really, really appreciate that you guys like this podcast so much. So thank you so much for that. Man, my voice is getting like weird. I got to take a drink here.
Just start that part over.
I'm gonna finish this out. Now, if you want to join in on this discussion, log on to svslearn.com, where we have a forum there, and we've posted this episode in its own thread. So chime in over there and let us know your thoughts. Thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.